Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, November 3rd, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, individual in crisis rescued from Humboldt Bay, October 29th. Arcata's new business leader emphasizes Humboldt's world-class food and drink. Following the ongoing government shutdown delays in CalFresh benefits, College of the Redwoods expands food services for students. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Last week, on October 29th, a Eureka Police Department Community Engagement Team Sergeant, patrol officers, and members of Humboldt Bay Fire responded to a report of a suspicious person and possible water rescue in Humboldt Bay, where the reporting party said that an individual appeared to be walking in the water near the Slough Bridge. KMUD News spoke to Laura Montagna, public information officer with the Eureka Police Department, for more information on the incident.
On October 29th, 2025, at about 5:25 p.m., a Eureka Police Department Community Safety Engagement Team sergeant, patrol officers, and members of Humboldt Bay Fire were dispatched to a report of a suspicious person and possible water rescue in Humboldt Bay, near the Slough Bridge. The reporting party indicated an individual appeared to be walking into the water. Upon arrival, HBF and EPD personnel observed a male approximately 50 yards from shore, moving erratically and continuing further out into the bay. HBF rescue swimmers deployed to contact the individual. However, upon contact, it became apparent that the individual was experiencing a mental health crisis and was uncooperative with rescue efforts. Due to the individual's location, HBF was unable to safely deploy their larger vessel and requested assistance from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office for a smaller, more maneuverable vessel. As daylight diminished, the situation posed increasing safety risks to both the individual and responding personnel. To assist, HCSO deployed a drone to provide aerial lighting and real-time footage to incident command. Mental health professionals from the Crisis Alternative Response of Eureka program were also notified. After approximately 2.5 hours of coordinated efforts, the individual ultimately complied with first responders and agreed to board the HCSO vessel. With assistance from the drone's aerial lighting, the individual was safely transported back to shore, where ambulance personnel provided medical attention. The individual was then transported to a nearby hospital and placed on a mental health hold for evaluation and care. The Eureka Police Department would like to extend its gratitude to the Humboldt Bay Fire Department and the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office for their collaboration. EPD and HBF would like to thank the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office for their assistance, as their personnel and resources were instrumental in ensuring the safety of both first responders and the individual involved.
If you or a loved one is in crisis and needs support, the number for the Humboldt County Crisis Stabilization Unit is 707-445-7715. Again, that's 707-445-7715 for the Humboldt County Crisis Stabilization Unit. This unit provides crisis intervention and stabilization services to individuals in need of immediate and emergency services. If in immediate danger and crisis, calling 911 and talking to the police may be necessary. The United States Crisis Line is also 988. For more information, the website is nami-humboldt.org/crisis-info. KMUD's Sigurd Bjorn recently spoke to local business owner Meredith Mayer about her new role as the head of Arcata's Chamber of Commerce. Mayer emphasized the need for countywide collaboration and spoke about Choose Humboldt and Home in Humboldt, two programs designed for helping local businesses thrive in a challenging time.
Meredith Mayer, the co-owner of the Six Rivers Brewery in McKinneyville, recently took over as the executive director of the Arcata Chamber of Commerce. We spoke to Mayer, who moved to Humboldt at the turn of the millennium, about her background and vision for businesses in Arcata and Humboldt County.
I've lived in Humboldt County since 2000, and I have been the co-owner and operator of Six Rivers Brewery in McKinleyville since 2004. I've been doing a lot of community development work with organizations like our McKinleyville Chamber and the Eureka Chamber, as well as the Arcata Chamber, and with Humboldt Made. And I just really gained a passion for business-to-business mentorship, for working with small businesses and entrepreneurs. I love the energy and the passion that they bring to new businesses. And I was really just inspired and just found a knack for that community development and economic development work. And so during the pandemic, we pivoted with our restaurant to bringing in food trucks and bringing in local vendors and creating a marketplace. And I just really, it kind of just really sparked a new passion in me to continue my community work and find an opportunity for me to really dig in and help out and try to keep our community thriving and entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs, especially in our community, to stay here, stay grounded, and invest in our community.
When asked what her priorities will be in helping Arcata businesses thrive, Mayer emphasizes countywide collaboration and sings her predecessor's praises.
I think my predecessor, who is also named Meredith, had done a great job really creating a collaborative spirit at the chamber. They took on Arcata Main Street and also then took on the Oyster Fest, which had kind of struggled, I think, focusing on the local bounty that our county has to offer and one of the biggest festivals that is put on in our community. And they really turned it around to make it local centric, local beer, local wine, supplying oysters locally, focusing on local vendors and adding in new merchants. And so I loved that about what she did. And she was also super collaborative with other chambers. She was hands-on and active with helping businesses and finding ways to be able to connect them, to be able to, help them grow. And I think that I'll just continue to carry that torch. I have lots of experience in running events through the brewery and also a lot of community development work with SBDC and Humble Made. And so I just kind of foresee continuing that, trying to work more collaboratively with the chambers, trying to get us all to work together a little bit more. See, for example, SBDC really excels at producing classes and workshops. So what the chamber can do is find out from its members the classes and the workshops that are most helpful for them, and then work with SBDC to create those classes. And then the chamber, if you're a chamber member, you'd have discounted opportunities or free opportunities to attend these courses. So that's exactly the point, is that we can start working together rather than us kind of all like being siloed and doing kind of all the same work, is that we can lean on the people who are doing already strong work, say like the workshops and classes at SBDC, and we can simply partner with them. And that way we can focus at the chamber on what it is our members need and be able to communicate that to SBDC.
The Redwood State and National Parks aside, Mayer sees locally produced goods, including food and drink, as a major driver in attracting tourists to the area.
So I know firsthand the things that draw people into our community to visit. And I also understand the needs of the local businesses as far as support to help continue to grow their businesses. So I definitely know that we have tourists coming that come for our breweries and distilleries. We have world-renowned beverage makers. We also have some world-renowned food producers at Dick Taylor Chocolates, at Cypress Grove. So people are coming because we have this world-renowned food and drink, as well as we have one of the most incredible national forests just here to the north. So I think focusing on tourism, recognizing that people are coming to visit, and when they're here, they need to eat and drink, they like to shop, and so we can continue to grow our tourism market and advertise outside of our community to draw people in.
As one of the driving forces behind the recent relaunch of Choose Humboldt, Mayer says the campaign is partially focused on making locals realize the positives of living in the county.
But I think, honestly, that part of what's going on in Humboldt a little bit is that we have a little bit of an internal problem about what we think about ourselves. And that's part of what's going on with the Choose Humboldt campaign, which is really exciting to work with, is that we're working to remind people what a cool community this is and why it's important to work together, why it's important to shop local, why it's important to take a moment to make sure that you can find and source the things you need within our own community. I think it's sometimes really easy to get, you know, downtrodden with things that are going on in the world, and sometimes just forget that it is really a cool place to live and work and play. And so just kind of trying to re-spark that in people, I think, is an important piece of keeping our community healthy and thriving.
Another upcoming program that a vast number of local businesses and organizations have put their weight behind is Home in Humboldt, a service which will help recent and prospective Humboldt transplants settle and feel at home in the area.
I chair the program committee, which is working on Home in Humboldt, which is basically like a concierge program for recruitment to the area. So say your spouse gets a job at CR or Cal Poly or Providence, and you are trying to find your community within our community. The Home in Humboldt program is going to help kind of bridge that to connect. If you like pickleball, we're going to find you a pickleball club. If you love wine, we're going to introduce you to the sommelier at the Carter House, and just kind of help introduce and help people get integrated in the community when they first moved here.
The program has been in the works since the early part of this year, but it's not quite ready to launch yet.
I think it'll roll out probably 2026, in the early part of 2026. There's definitely a lot of planning going on right now, just kind of networking. I know like the symphonies reached out. There's a lot of people that are kind of starting to get involved. So like the symphony was saying like, oh, we can provide tickets to people who are really into music. And so there's some really cool partnerships being built, so we can have a really robust program when we roll it out in 2026.
The hope for Home in Humboldt is that people who come to the area to work stay here beyond their 3 or 6 months or however long they've signed up for. And the key issue may not be to make just them feel at home in Humboldt, but their partners and families as well. Humboldt County is an attractive place for many reasons. It makes a huge impression on those who come to visit. Some never forget the experience, and one day they may come back and stay for good. Meredith Mayer, the new executive director for Arcadia's Chamber of Commerce, is one such example.
I grew up in a family of very passionate agate hunters, and we spent 2 weeks every summer in August camping at Sume Park. And I simply loved being here. I went away to school. I grew up in the Bay Area and went away to school during the Silicon Valley boom. And when I got back after I graduated from college, got back to San Jose, I just knew that I couldn't stay there and thrive there. And I moved to Humboldt and started working sales jobs up here until I started the brewery in 2004.
College of the Redwoods Basic Needs Center has increased food pantry access in response to the U.S. government shutdown's impact on CalFresh recipients. Julian Jackson reports.
After the government shutdown at the beginning of October 2025, state and federal agencies announced that if the federal government does not reopen or take action to fund benefits by October 23rd, CalFresh recipients could see delays in their November 2025 benefits. Now that date has came and went, and in response, food pantries and similar support organizations across Humboldt County are reallocating resources in response. A recent press release by College of the Redwoods revealed that their Basic Needs Center is doing just that to support the approximate 33% or one-third of their students relying on CalFresh benefits. For more information, I spoke with Stephanie Fryermuth, who is coordinating the Responsive Food Drive with the Basic Needs Center and CR Foundation.
So my name is Stephanie Fryermuth. I'm the interim manager for Basic Needs and Wellness at College of the Redwoods, which means right now overseeing our Basic Needs Center and our response to the SNAP shutdown. Most of our changes have been an expansion of what we already offer, and it's kind of building on the framework that we've had for the last couple of years. Our primary source of funding is through the California Community College Chancellor's Office, which provides support to students to support their basic needs. So those services look like primarily our food pantry. We offer weekly pantry items as well as daily food and snack options. We also house our housing and security program through there, which is a different funding stream, but it also works through our basic needs center intake process. We have a clothing closet. We do resource fairs where we bring other resources on campus. We partner with Humble IPA to provide health coordination and care and to do referrals into the community kind of care structure that we don't necessarily have the capacity to do, but we work closely with them. We also have sort of developed a student wellness resource center where students can get referrals to other organizations like North Coast Rape Crisis Team, Humble IPA Mental Health. We do case management, food boxes, sponsor events on campus, things like that, and transportation assistance, primarily bus passes. And then we do have some other kind of one-time vouchers for things like laundry. When people move into new homes, we can help them with thrift store vouchers that can help get them the housing supplies that they need. So we try to cover all the areas of their basic needs, but it's primarily food insecurity that we focus on. So what are we doing now? So we have expanded our food offerings. Right now, we typically allow people one item for breakfast and lunch every day when they come in. And so now they're allowed two items for breakfast, two items for lunch. Our food pantry weekly limits have went to 10 to 15 items. We're bringing in the next couple weeks some more fresh produce, eggs, milk. We're exploring the ability. We're working through some, you know, logistical stuff with refrigeration, but we're hoping to bring in some meat products as well. Some of the perishable items that students really relied on SNAP for. We're also going to be offering some grocery assistance. So we have gift cards coming that'll hopefully be available by the end of next week for students who are typically would receive SNAP for they can buy those perishable items. We're also putting on a campus-wide food drive, and we're doing Thanksgiving boxes. We've had a really overwhelming amount of students sign up for the Thanksgiving boxes, so we're kind of mobilizing efforts to make sure that we can have enough to supply for that. But basically just increasing our offerings surrounding food insecurity. So our primary funding, again, is from the California Community College Chancellor's Office, and they give an annual allocation of funds to each California Community College to run a basic needs center. And so we're leveraging that funding a little more aggressively now. We've carried over a little bit of funds, so we are definitely full force ahead with supporting our students with that funding. We also very fortunate to have a really, really active foundation. Marty Coelho, our executive director there, has engaged all of his resources to getting donations. We're already seeing cash donations roll in. We've had people bringing food donations. Staff and faculty are asking how they can help. So we've definitely kind of coordinated with the foundation a lot. So there is a charitable aspect that funds our resources and our pantry. I worry if things continue. If we see this continue on for months and months without people getting their SNAP benefits, I think we're gonna see just an increase in the outlying effect. It's going to affect not just people's food security, but their housing security, their ability to provide for their families through the winter months. We all know utilities go up. And so I worry about the response from the state and their, you know, generous benefits beginning to dry up because there's just the need is so big. We're assessing kind of day to day, like what our students need. And we're trying to be as kind of flexible and adaptive as we possibly can to give our students what they need. And food is such a like primary source of culture and care. And that's, you know, what we want to provide to our students and let them know that we are looking out for them and that they're not in this alone.
For more on direct student support and how others can help, I spoke with the in-center student support specialist.
Hi, I'm Teresa Huffman, and I'm a student specialist worker at the Basic Needs Center here at College of the Redwoods. We see over 100 students a day that come through here to access the food pantry and just get food daily. One of the things that we try to encourage students is when they come in, instead of just grabbing something to eat, which is important, obviously, we ask that they do our intake form so that I can sit down and meet with them and find out how things are going with their food, transportation, housing, financial, mental health. and try to connect them with services on and off campus around that. And so that's when we also talk to students, have you applied for CalFresh before? Are you receiving it? And then we can help support students in applying if they haven't. So yeah, if you are interested in donating, you could come here to the Basic Needs Center, which is the Eureka main campus behind the Student Services Building, and donate shelf-stable food items. We'll have containers throughout the campus where you can drop food in as well. And then also, if you want to donate monetarily, you could go to the CR's website under the foundation page and say donate, and then you can click what area you would like to donate, and the Basic Needs Center is one of those options.
Back to the press release, quote, in addition to campus resources, College of the Redwoods encourages students and community members to utilize countywide food assistance programs, which remain available in Humboldt and Del Norte counties. Unquote. I've been Julian Jackson reporting for KMUD News.
Turning to Mendocino, Proposition 50 could reshape Mendocino's congressional districts. KMUD's Sydney Fishman reports.
The measure would redraw California's congressional districts, shifting political boundaries in a way that could help Democrats gain up to 5 new seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. Proposition 50 was placed on the ballot by Governor Gavin Newsom and Democratic lawmakers. It would temporarily override the independent map created by the California Citizens Redistricting Commission and give redistricting power back to the legislature until 2030. Here in Mendocino County, that means new lines, with Ukiah and the Coast staying in District 2, represented by Democrat Jared Huffman, with Eastern Mendocino County moving to District 1, represented by Republican Doug LaMalfa. County elections officials say turnout is already strong.
I think it's pretty large. I think, we're ahead of what we normally are. So usually a lot of them do come in then, it's like you said, it's hard to say until we actually get there. And, but I do anticipate, a big presence on at least dropping off their ballots or us receiving ballots.
That's Assessor Clerk Recorder for Mendocino County, Katrina Bartlome. She says voters can still cast ballots in person from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday in the Ukiah Elections Office. Bartlome says the county had asked to make this election vote by mail only, since Proposition 50 is the only measure on the ballot, but the state denied that request.
We asked if we couldn't be all mail-in, because there's only one thing on the ballot, and the Secretary of State said no, that we'll, a lot of the counties have vote centers or traditional polling places that have to be open.
The special election costs about $351,000, but Bartlome says the state has already reimbursed the county. If costs come in under budget, the leftover funds will help pay for the next statewide election in 2026. Bartlome says election staff could be working late into the night on Tuesday, especially if weather slows ballot returns from rural areas such as Gualala.
We could be here until 11 or 12 o'clock. Our furthest polling place is Gualala, and if the weather's bad, it takes 2.5 hours to get here.
Bartlome also reminds voters not to erase or cross out any mistakes on their ballots. Instead, write the word spoiled on the envelope and bring it to the elections office for a replacement. Voters with questions can call 707-234-6819 or visit mendocinocounty.org/elections. Ballots must be returned by 8 p.m. on election day, either by mail, at a polling place, or in an official drop box. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Sydney Fishman in Ukiah.
And in national Native news, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is national Native news. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In a historic moment, the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration have transferred land to the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. As Danielle Kading reports, it's the first known land transfer nationwide from a Catholic institution to a tribal nation in the name of reparations.
The transfer aims to repair the painful legacy of federal Indian boarding schools. From the early 19th century until 1969, Native American children were removed from their homes and forced to assimilate. The Franciscan Sisters transferred its Mary Wood Franciscan Spirituality Center in Arbor Vitae to Lac du Flambeau. Araya Breedlove, the tribe's spokesperson, says it's a significant moment.
Having this be the first time, as we know of at least, that any institution has given land back in regards to reparations, it's rare that we see the acknowledgement of that hurt and the generational trauma.
Sue Ernster is president of the Franciscan Sisters.
We do see this as the beginning of deepening the relationship and really helping to heal our part of the trauma.
The band purchased the property for $30,000. While the Spirituality Center was never a boarding school, the Franciscan Sisters ran St. Mary's Catholic Indian Boarding School on the Bad River Tribes Reservation in Wisconsin. Officials with the Lac du Flambeau Tribe say they're grateful for the sisters' kindness and willingness to acknowledge the hurt and trauma from boarding schools. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
A Kodiak-based nonprofit dedicated to supporting families with newborns is expanding into the Northwest Arctic Borough. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports on how Kodiak Kindness is helping families across Alaska raise babies.
For years, Noya Kwanda Baltazar has been teaching infants in Kotzebue through a local program that serves children with disabilities or delayed development. It's the only such program based out of a school district in the state. Baltazar says it's about helping kids from birth to 3 years old and their families around the Manilik service area, which covers 12 communities in northwest Alaska from Kotzebue to Kobuk.
Working with birth to three, it's always good about helping families, ensuring that they're strong, supported, and any way we can support families and nursing moms to help their babies grow, I think is great.
Baltazar and Francis Williams from Ambler are bringing their experience working with children to Kodiak Kindness as they continue doing what they already do, but under the new title of peer counselors. Williams, who is known in her hometown as the village mother, says being part of the organization will give her more support and tools to do things she already does on a regular basis in the Northwest Arctic community.
Kodiak Kindness would be able to help because there's a lot of things that I learned when we went to the trainings. Things that we didn't know, so all the training will be able to help. Like, I'll be able to do my own mix, you know, with Kodiak Kindness and my Inupiaq traditions.
Williams says she uses native plants like stinkweed or spruce trees to make salves or other traditional medicines to help her friends, family, and neighbors heal from the land. Aside from the traditional knowledge Williams has from her mom and aunties, she'll also be able to help her community with assistance from a certified lactation consultant if she wants support virtually from the Kodiak Kindness team via telehealth. Kodiak Kindness's two new peer counselors in the Northwest Arctic Borough come online this winter and hope to start enrolling families in the region early next year. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Sigur Bjorn, Julian Jackson, Sydney Fishman, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Matt Cardos.